All right, so we want to read again these last four verses of 2 Chronicles 16 as we wrap up our study about the reign of Asa, king of Judah. And in this chapter, chapter 16 here in 2 Chronicles is the chapter that does record some of the shortcomings of Asa. We want to keep that in the context of what God has said about Asa in summary of his life elsewhere. We do remember when we were introduced to him in the account of 1 Kings chapter 15 and verse 11, where it said, Asa did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord, as did David his father. And then we had the statement in the previous chapter here in 2 Chronicles in chapter 15, when it says that in verse 17 there, that the heart of Asa was perfect all his days. And we noted that that word is a form of the Hebrew word shalom, which means to peace or being in safety in the context, of course, with God. So based on those statements that we have in 1 Kings and 2 Chronicles about the life of Asa, was Asa someone who turned away from God, rejected God, and became an unbeliever in his final days? And the answer is no, but we do have two different instances where we read and late in his life that he fell to temptation, and in both cases, it had to do with the issue of trusting the Lord, which is something he had been strong in throughout his life. But all of this that we're reading in chapter 16 is a very good reminder that no matter how much we have grown in Christ, because all these things are written to us for examples. These are for our learning. And so what do we learn from this? Well, we do learn for us, no matter how much we've grown in Christ, no matter how strong we are spiritually, is the devil going to stop trying to get us to fall to temptation? And there's some that we're, and of course the answer to that is no, very obviously. And there's some things that we can become susceptible to if we're not very careful and on guard, being vigilant and sober, as we are instructed to do from 1 Peter 5:8, to be sober, to be vigilant. For what reason? Because what about our adversary? Who is he and what's he like? The devil. And he is like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. And so verse 9 in 1 Peter 5 says, whom resist steadfast in the faith. So we have to be steadfast. We have to continue to grow in our faith. We have to be sober, that is sound-minded and vigilant. We need to be watchful and on guard at all times. And at no point in life can we spiritually relax or feel complacent or like we don't really need to worry, because if we, or be concerned. But if we let our guard down, the devil's, he's going to be there and find a weak spot. And he did with Asa. And obviously from what we're reading in this chapter, there was some pride that the devil was able to develop in his heart in these latter years. And that became an issue for Asa. The first situation that we read about in this chapter through the involved verses 1 through 10 was when Israel, Baasha, the king of Israel, became a threat to him, and he solved that problem not by trusting the Lord and asking the Lord for help and deliverance in that situation, but rather he went and solved it his own way by buying off the king of Syria and having him transfer his alliance or allegiance from that with Baasha and Israel to help him, Asa, the king of Judah. But relying on this man instead of God was a problem. And he was rebuked by God's prophet for having done foolishly in that situation. What is another temptation? And this can be certainly case when we have grown stronger spiritually. And if we've won a lot of battles over temptation, well, then if somebody comes along and points out something where we're not doing well in a situation, what's going to be the temptation then? What happened to Asa?
He was brought to God in prison.
Yeah, he got mad at the prophet. I mean, when he was telling him he had done foolishly, he rejected outright that thought that he had done anything foolish, and was angry with the prophet, imprisoned him, and it's pretty obvious that there were others in Judah around that did not agree with what he had done, either with his going to the king of Syria or his action against God's prophet, or likely both. But in addition to putting the prophet in prison, it says in verse 10 that he oppressed some of the people at the same time. So he got mad at a few folks. And so he was not doing well either in the with the temptation to begin with, when he didn't trust in the Lord and rely on him in that matter. But then he made it worse by in his reaction against the one who were trying to help him spiritually. So there was that situation. Then we have the last four verses of the chapter that's going to conclude his life and tell us of the end of his life. But then there's one other matter that he's going to bring up in here. So let's read verses 11 through 14. Brother Ted, can you read that for us, please? 2 Chronicles 16, 11 to 14.
And behold, the act of Asa, first and last, no, they are written in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel. And Asa had 39 years of his reign, and deceased in his feet until his deceit was exceedingly great, yet in his disease he sought not to the Lord and rather the physician. And Asa slept with his father and died in the 140 years in his reign. And he would and they buried him in his own sepulchre, which he had made for himself in the city of David. And they laid him filled with sweet odors and with fine pan of spices prepared of the ark, and they made a very great burial for him.
All right, so how was Asa remembered by the people of Judah after his 41 years? I mean, he was remembered well for good reason. And, I mean, was it because of the battles that he won or the victories that Judah had under his reign? I mean, it would obviously be for the spiritual good that he accomplished in his life and did for all, not just for himself, of course, but for all the kingdom. I mean, the end of chapter 15 tells us about how he brought the people, made them swear to a covenant to seek the Lord with all their heart, and they did so. So he had a great influence for good on all the nation. I mean, from the beginning of his reign, when he was given those 10 years of peace as he were seeking the Lord, and then he used that time to rid the land of the idols and the Sodomites that were there, and then he was trusting in the Lord and encouraging the people to do, and that battle against the Ethiopians, and God gave them deliverance then. And I mean, all those things that were going on throughout his reign, he was including even removing his own mother's queen when she was worshiping idols. So his strength and his example for good and of righteousness was a great blessing to all of Judah, and this went on for a reign of 41 years. So this was a very strong point or a high point in the history of Judah with what was under the reign of Asa. And in fact, it's going to continue with his son, Jehoshaphat, who was also a righteous man. And of course, Jehoshaphat's going to fall into some temptations as well. And there are going to be some similarities even with this reliance on or this being willing to join hands with the ungodly as Asa did with that king of Syria. Jehoshaphat is going to do that, particularly with the kingdom of Israel and Ahab and his family. As wicked as they were, as he even married his own son into their family. So we're going to read about a great shortcoming with Jehoshaphat too, and some of those along those lines, but otherwise we'll read about him being a righteous man. Yes?
A question for you.
Mm-hmm.
In chapter, verse 14, it talks about the making of great burning for him. Was he cremated?
Not necessarily. I mean, there were, in fact, it tells us how he was buried in his own, he did have a burial, so that was not a, cremation was not a, was not a practice that we read about among the Israelites at all. So he was buried in his own tomb, it says in verse 14. So he underwent a burial, but there was some part of the custom with the memorializing him, the funeral, that involved burning. It wouldn't have been burning bodies, but they were doing something. I mean, there was something about the custom or whatever that involved whatever that was, whatever that great burning that they engaged in.
I thought it might have had something to do with the fact that he was diseased that they had.
Because we know he was buried. So, so they didn't burn his body, And he wasn't a leper. And even in fact, later when we read, we'll read about Amaziah, who was one of the kings of Judah that became, Azariah, Uzziah, who was one of the kings of Judah a little bit later, who became a leper. Because he went into the temple when he was not authorized to do so. And even him, even though he was kept in a separate house, he was buried. So they practiced burial even for the kings, even when they were diseased with something like leprosy. But there was something about their custom with the with their lamentation or whatever, that they were burning something. And it was very great, so that was something notable that that they engaged in. That was a reflection of their mourning for him and for the regard that he was held in for the good that he did in his life and as their king. Nevertheless, we do have that point that comes out in verse 12, and this is something that happened in his 39th year, he had some kind of a disease in his feet, and it was exceeding great. So this is within the last 2 years of his life, and this whatever that disease was, and they're different. There are different kinds of diseases that you can get in your feet. Ask Brother Michael. There are different kinds. There are musculoskeletal type of issues and that can cause inflammation and great pain in there. There are different infectious kinds of issues that can affect the feet. I mean, there's lots of different things medically that can happen to the feet. Of course, for another part of my life, I'm kind of curious to what exactly that was, what kind of disease he had in his feet, but we're not told. So all that is a big question that we won't have an answer to here because the Lord doesn't tell us. What we do know is he had a disease in his feet, and it became exceeding great. And this was in the last 2 years of his life. Did he die from that? Was it related to that, or did he have some other health problems that he died from? I mean, you can surmise. I mean, he could have had diabetes. I mean, and that could have caused problems in his feet, and could have ultimately his death could have been from some other complication than that, not necessarily directly from the feet itself, although it could have been. But I mean, that's just anyway. There's just any number of ways we could go with that, but we don't have the answers to that. However, the key piece of information that we're given, what the Lord tells us about it, is when he had this disease in his feet, and we do recognize this was not just some minimal problem, some small thing. And if something affects your feet and your ability to walk, it's not many people regard that as a small thing. And I mean that you get a problem there in your feet, and then you can't move around like you're used to. I mean that's something that is very easy to take for granted, that we can just. You know, you wake up in the morning and you put your 2 feet on the floor and you stand up and then you start going and doing things. And we get so accustomed to that. I mean, how often do we think about, well, that's really a blessing that we can just, that we can get up and that we can stand up and we can walk and do things. And there's so many things that we are blessed with that we probably don't think about as much and are maybe not as thankful as we should be. But if we lose an ability to do something, then we have very quickly have a different perspective on that, don't we? It's when you lose it, then, oh, well, that's something that it becomes very important, and then we want to ask the Lord to restore that blessing that we have, which is really the heart of the issue here with Asa in verse 12. When he had that disease, what did he do? All right, so now we have this this subject of healing. We can even put health up there, that form of the word. So we have God, and then over here those wretched physicians. But I mean, we kind of look at that as, is it the problem was that he sought to physicians instead of some other men, and that he should have gone to other men instead of the doctors for this? Or so physicians, is it that was the profession was the problem, or was it because he went to man instead of God? I mean, that was really the issue. He had a choice here. He could rely upon the Lord and seek to the Lord, but he sought to man for his healing, not to God. Now, according to the way it is phrased there, Asa made this where it was an either-or situation. Does this, and we can put physicians over here, is it automatically true that if we rely upon God for our healing, that physicians or medicine or anything like that is out of the picture? That it's automatically means that we have to reject everything that would be involved from anything that man could do. Is that what that is teaching? No, it isn't. And we have lots of scriptures that can show us that. Is it possible to seek to God, and that as part of seeking God, that that can involve what God can use of other men and things that can be a help to us? And of course the answer to that is yes. And we'll see this not only, I mean, right now we're looking at this example that's in the physical realm, but the same is also true in the spiritual realm. Whatever kind of healing that we need, be it physical or spiritual, where's it going to come from? If we're going to have it, who's going to give it? It has to come from God. And if we are seeking it from some other source apart from God, it's not going to be. There is no other one that can provide us any of that. I mean, God is the only one. He's the only source of it. Now, can God use men in our physical healing? Yes. Can God use men in helping us in a spiritual fashion? Yeah, and that is actually his will to do so. So when we're looking at this, where God versus man, in this case with Asa, it was Asa is the one that made it an either-or thing, where he sought to man for his help, but did not seek to God for his help. That was the problem, that he did not seek the Lord. Because it's not teaching there at all that the Lord would have been unwilling to use physicians to help Asa if he had sought to him. And we want to look at some scriptures about that to make where that would be made very clear. In the Song of Moses, Deuteronomy 32 and verse 39, this is a reminder of where all power is, and it can be a temptation for us, especially, and we see a lot of this. You know, why is it in the age that we live in, where there have been so many advancements and in science with technology, we see it in medicine and so many other ways, with the kinds of things that have been provided by God through all of that. Why is that coincided with, am I just assuming this, would you agree that as we have advanced in our society with technology and science and things, that has coincided with a greater trust in man and less so upon God? I don't believe that's difficult to see that has gone together. Which is really a sad thing, because who's the one that has provided all of that, whatever advancements there are? I mean, who's the one that has given? And that's what the reminder is here. So we don't want to, through any of the things that we see happening, to think, oh, man, it's great. Look at what he's discovered. And I wish we had more time where we could read the last several chapters of the book of Job. You remember in there where Job was challenged by God, and God asked him just a series of questions to this very day. And most of those questions he asked were scientific in their basis, or that's how we would categorize those things. But to this very day, most of the questions that God asked Job, we still don't have an answer to. There's some that we do, but what was the point God was making to Job? The same one he makes in this verse here in Psalm 32 and verse 39, that God is the source of these things. Job wasn't God. No man is. God is the only one that knows all of these things. He's the one that has established them. I mean, there are, with science, things that we can know of the material world, and I mean, there are laws. I mean, there are many equations that measure and that show how the different things work, and most of us have been tortured with those at different points in our lives, but especially when we were younger and in school. But the fact is, those are things that have been revealed to us by God of His creation. But who's the one that set up those laws? You know, are they Newton's laws, or are they God's? God happened to give Sir Isaac Newton some understanding on some things of the physical realm, but he wasn't the one that made that up, was he? And Einstein, famous for his E equals MC squared, I mean, did he make that up? Did he establish that particular law that he discovered or whatever it was? I mean, no. I mean, that was something that God established. And I mean, so these guys that are men that are held in such high esteem, and look what they discovered. Well, God is the one that revealed it. God's the one that established it in the first place. God's the one that made all of these things. He's the one that designed it. He's the one that set it up to go according to certain parameters and boundaries that He set up. We read about a lot of those things in the scriptures, but we don't want to ever forget it's ultimately God that's the maker of all things. And God is the one that knows all. And He's the one that, if there's anything that man knows, it's God who has made that known to man. So let's read that verse, Psalm 32, 39. Brother Aaron, can you read that, please?
It's Psalm 32.
Deuteronomy, I'm sorry. We'll get to Psalm in a minute. I said the wrong thing. Deuteronomy 32. So who's the one that heals? If there's any healing to be had, in whatever way it is, who's going to be the source of it? God and only God. So he and that's true of life and everything. If God doesn't give life, there is no life. If he doesn't heal, there is no healing. And whatever it is, it's God. And so that's a verse that reminds us of that fact. And like we mentioned, we got several chapters in Job where that point is made in a very it's really in a beautiful way with those questions that are asked there, but it strongly illustrates just how weak we are and how ignorant we really are, and we are not God. So then we have lots of examples where God provided this healing. In the physical realm, I mean, there are several examples of that. Exodus 15 and verse 26 is one of these verses. And we could look at, in fact, there has been a book written, I read a number of years ago, called None of These Diseases. It's that phrase based on this, what we're reading, the phrase that we read in this book. And it's really kind of from a medical standpoint. God gave a lot of laws to the children of Israel. Those laws, there were some that pertained directly to their worship. It was also a civil law for Israel because it was a physical nation. But in some of these laws, they had some laws that were in the issue of health, really. I mean, they were spiritual but there were also physical ramifications of those things. Just like today, we see, how many health problems do people have that are related to lifestyle choices that people have made? I wouldn't have much to do most days if that weren't the case. The vast majority of things that I see in medicine, they really are related to things that people, because they decided to engage in certain types of behaviors, it leads to a lot of medical, physical problems. With Israel, there were a lot of diseases that were present in Egypt. And if they followed the morals of the Egyptians, what was going to happen? They would have been afflicted with the same things the Egyptians were. But if they lived the kinds of moral lives that God taught them to and gave them laws about, one of the promises that he made was what we read here. Let's read Exodus chapter 15, verse 26 for the tray.
And say, if thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, will do that which is right in his sight, and will give ear to his commandments, keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon thee.
All right, so God was going to provide that kind of healing, and much of it was going to be in what we call prevention, preventive health, by not engaging in various immoral behaviors that would lead to those things. But again, who's the one that said he put those diseases on the ones that did those things and said that he would give health and not put those diseases on the Israelites if they obeyed his commandments? Who's the one that's taking credit for all that goes on there based on man's choices? It's the Lord. I've seen I've seen guys that smoked two or three packs of cigarettes for decades and didn't get cancer from it. And sometimes also it'll never hurt me. Sometimes they'll talk about that. Of course, there are other ways in which those cigarettes have hurt them, and they may not connect that, but I do my best to try to connect those dots for them anyway. But sometimes people will talk about those kinds of things. Well, they never hurt me. Well, for every every person that might have engaged in some kind of behavior that, well, is it true that sometimes the Lord may choose not to put a disease on somebody that did everything to that basically could have earned that disease, and God, for whatever reason, decided not to give them that? Certainly. But for every one of those, how many end up with those things? And when you know that risk is there, well, then what doesn't that then enter the realm of tempting the Lord? If you know, based on everything, when God has made it very clear, if you do this, this is what's likely to happen. I mean, and if we go ahead and do those things anyway, then if it happens, I mean, are we not tempting the Lord in that fashion? I mean, there's a lot of scriptures that come involved there. But God made that promise to the Israelites, and if they kept His commandments and those laws that taught them the difference between right and wrong, and that they were to live lives that were going to be moral. I mean, it was going to involve it would involve their diet, it would involve their morality and behaviors and across the board. And if they would abide by those things, just like today, as Christians, I mean, if from the beginning we keep those the commandments of the Lord, and I mean, are there some physical things that should not happen to a Christian? There are. I mean, there are certain things that, I mean, if we do it exactly, live our lives exactly as the Lord taught us to, there are certain things that shouldn't happen. And they're different. I mean, there are things, communities that, I mean, I think of the Amish community, you know, they stick very close together, and there are certain, I mean, they abide by certain things. There are certain kinds of sicknesses and stuff that are unknown to their population because they don't do certain things. But for a Christian, I mean, for us, I mean, there are certain things that if we obey the Lord's commandments, there are certain things that shouldn't happen. I mean, that we should see the connection that was there very plainly stated there by the Lord in Exodus for the people of Israel who had been in Egypt and had been sojourning there for hundreds of years. And the Egyptians, they were surrounded by their immorality, and they knew of the kinds of diseases and things that were prevalent in that society, that they may not have seen the connection to their behaviors and the sins they committed to some of the diseases they suffered from. But the Lord made that clear, and ultimately it was God that God's the one that afflicts, God is the one that heals. But we can see that very plainly in that particular verse also. And then we have some examples where the Lord healed ones who were sick. Abimelech in Genesis 20, when his household was afflicted after he took in Sarai, Abraham's wife. And then Abraham, who did he ask to heal Abimelech? I mean, he asked God to do that. God did that. But would that have happened without God taking that action? Was that going to happen apart from God? No. When Miriam was struck with leprosy in Numbers chapter 12 and verse 13, what did Moses do? And that was when she had was lifted up in pride against her brother, as was Aaron. Yeah, she was made a leper, but what did Moses do when it happened in verse 13 of Numbers 12? He prayed to God to heal her, and he did. But, I mean, Moses recognized where that problem came from, and he asked God to provide the healing. And God did that. And we could look at a lot of other examples of that. One that I do want us to read right now is in 2 Kings chapter 20. So, Brother Samuel, can you read 1 through 11 there? This is with Hezekiah. And this is one that should make it very clear where we can see that it's ultimately God, but we can also see that God can, and it is often His will, to bring physicians and to use different things, medicines and things that are part of what God is going to use for the healing, even though we don't want to ever forget that it's God is the one that has to provide it. So let's read here, 2 Kings chapter 20, verses 1 through 11, Brother Sam.
In those days, when Hezekiah seemed unto death, and the prophet Isaiah, the son of Amos, came to him and said unto him, Thus saith the Lord, Set thine house in order, for thou shalt die, and not live. Then he turned his face to the wall and prayed unto the Lord, saying, I beseech thee, O Lord, remember now how I walked before thee in truth and with a perfect heart, and have done that which is good in thy sight. And Hezekiah wept sore. And it came to pass, before Isaiah was gone out from the middle of the court, that the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, Turn again and tell Hezekiah, the captain of my people, Thus saith the Lord, the God of David thy father, and I have heard thy prayer, I have seen thy tears, behold, I will heal thee. On the third day thou shalt go up into the house of the Lord. And I will add unto thy days 15 years, and I will deliver thee and this city out of the hand of the king of Assyria. And I will defend the city for my own sake, for my servant David's sake. And Isaiah said, Take a lump of figs, and I took it and laid it on the boil, and he recovered. And Hezekiah said unto Isaiah, What shall be the sign that the Lord will heal me, and that I shall go up into the house of the Lord the third day? And Isaiah said, The sign shalt thou have of the Lord, that the Lord will do the thing that he has spoken. Shall the shadow go forward 10 degrees, or go back 10 degrees? And Hezekiah answered, It is a light thing for the shadow to go down 10 degrees, nay, but let the shadow return backwards 10 degrees. And Isaiah the prophet cried unto the Lord, and he brought the shadow 10 degrees backward, by which it had gone down in the valley of Ahaz.
All right, so who was in control of Hezekiah's health? God. And who else? Nobody. Who gave Hezekiah that sickness to start with? Obviously, the Lord did. Well, who was the one that recovered him and healed him? God. Was it God or the lump of figs? Let's ask a question. Does everybody vote God on that one, not the lump of figs? All right, let's ask the question another way. If he hadn't used that lump of figs, would he have gotten better? No. Tom?
No, because he was told to.
Exactly. And in fact, that's similar to Naaman and his leprosy in 2 Kings 5. When he was told to go dip in the Jordan River 7 times. Was it the waters of the Jordan River? Is that where the power was over his leprosy? No, it was from God. But God had said, okay, this would be the way it would have to go. And until he didn't, if he didn't do that, until he did that fully, he was a leper. But whenever he obeyed the God, whenever he did finally obey God, the leprosy was gone. So it's it parallels that very, that's another example to see with that. But so this lump of figs, did God use that? Did he designate that in this case with Hezekiah and use that as his means of providing his healing where all the healing came from God? So Hezekiah, could he have made it where his trust was in the lump of figs? And then he would have been wrong like Asa. But he didn't. He had his trust in the Lord, understanding, well, this is the way that God said it would be done, and he did it. And then God is the one that provided the healing. But that's a very clear example. And I mean, somewhere in there, there would have been a pharmacist like Megan, or maybe some doctor that could have been involved in that too. But I mean, whether there's a physician, an apothecary, we read about an apothecary, that's what we would call today, a pharmacist. But somebody mixes the medicines, puts it together, but whoever is prescribing it, putting it together, whatever. I mean, ultimately, it's God. And if we have a sickness, who should we turn to? Who should we ask for our health? Who should we credit with our life and breath and all things? If we live, if God wills, we shall live or do this or that, have health, be able to walk, be able to breathe, be able to do anything that we can do. It's only by Him. Now, when we're sick, we go to a doctor, but do we go there? Are we going to be like Asa, where we don't ask God? Because if we're not asking Him and we just go there to man for our help and we're not asking the Lord to do it, then we're just like Asa. Then we've got a problem. What did Jesus say about in Matthew 9? Let's go there and read 9 through 13. This is on the spiritual side, and again, God's the one that provides. If we're going to have what we need physically, it's from God. If we're going to have what we need spiritually, it's going to be from God. Let's read what Jesus said here, Matthew 9, 9 through 13. He's going to use the physical, the terms of what we can relate to physically about physicians and healing to the spiritual sicknesses of the people here. Let's see, George, can you read Matthew 9, 9 to 13?
And as Jesus passed forth from thence, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the receipt of custom. And he said unto him, follow me, and here arise and follow him. And it came to pass as Jesus sat at meat in the house, behold, many publicans and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw it, they said unto his disciples, why eat your master with publicans and sinners? But when Jesus heard that, he said unto them, they that be whole need not a physician, but they that are sick. But go ye and learn what that meaneth. I will have mercy and not sacrifice, for I am not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance.
All right, well, who does need a physician?
Those that are sick.
So was Jesus taking a position that was against going to physicians for sicknesses? Clearly not. Brother Tom?
Just the beginning of 13.
Yes.
But go ye and learn what that meaneth.
Yeah. And we need to. They had a spiritual problem, but Jesus is using the physical side, but of course he's dealing with the spiritual side here, those that need, and he was the spiritual physician here. Now we also know Luke, who was one that was involved in spreading the gospel, accompanying the Apostle Paul, and he was also a physician by his profession, and referred to as the beloved physician. So, I mean, we can look at a lot of scriptures where God clearly does not put medicine, doctors, nurses, pharmacists, whatever this on that in the healthcare field does not say don't ever go to one of those. That's somehow a reflection of a lack of faith to turn to a man to help us if we have a physical need. No, it's God's will to use those things. We need to go to God though and ask Him when we're going to somebody else. You go to somebody for a health matter, but we should ask and be relying on God to provide the blessing.
One of the notes in my Bible talks about that what he's really relied on was like folk remedies, like that had a lot to do with superstitions and before.
Well, back then they didn't have, some of the things that they use now, we've learned. I mean, there's some things, remedies that were used back in those ancient times that actually have medicinal properties. Some of the medicines that we use today have their basis in plant, physical properties that are medical properties of various plants and things. So some of those things, there were some legitimate, and then we could trace that back. Well, who was the one that originally gave that information to man at some point? But along the way also, I mean, there have been lots of things, as Brother Marshall's pointing out, where there have been remedies that people have come up with. I remember seeing this in when I was in India, one of the, they have their, what they call their Ayurvedic medicine over there, where they, this village, basically witch doctors, and this is based in the Hindu religion, but they have some of their own concepts about health and things that are not related, that don't have their basis in anything that's correct. I mean, they would put, sometimes as part of their practices, they would put fresh cow dung on an open infection, believing that's going to heal that. It does not. I mean, it introduces bacteria directly into an open wound. Those things fester and get worse. But, I mean, so there are those kinds of things, whatever whatever the thought was behind the lump of figs for Hezekiah. I mean, the Lord is the one that said, use that lump of figs. It was not, the power wasn't in that lump, but that was, it was God that healed him, but God had that means that time. But whatever it is, I mean, if in whatever prescription the doctor might write and pharmacist might fill and nurse might help administer, whatever it is, if it's going to help us, it's going to be because God is providing that help. And we don't ever forget that. And also recognize that on the spiritual side as well. James 5:19-20. Brother Michael, can you read that? James 5:19-20. This is speaking on the spiritual side and how God intends to use others, humans, our brethren, helping in spiritual needs that we might have. Brother Michael?
Brethren, if any of you do err from the truth and want to convert him, let him know that he which converts the sinner from the error of his way shall save a soul from death and shall hide a multitude of sins.
So, do we have a role with each other in helping each other spiritually? Is it God's will to use people to help us spiritually? Those that are in a position, we could look at a lot of other scriptures, those that are qualified to do so, these would be faithful brethren that are spiritual, Galatians 6 and verse 1. But it is God's will to use each other to help us in our spiritual lives. Who's the one that's ultimately going to provide that healing that we need, that strength that we need spiritually? God. But we see, so we don't want to make it as where we're going to some other person, our brother or sister in Christ, and we're not asking the Lord to help us when we go to them. So we don't want to be like Asa and ever make it where we're relying on man and not God. We do need to always rely on God, recognizing that it is God's will to use, whether it's physically or spiritually, that he can use other people to help us. So that we always must trust the Lord and be on the lookout for temptations. Even, some could argue, especially as we get older and stronger spiritually in our lives, the things that can become areas of temptation late in life, the devil's not going to give up. He's going to try to destroy us right to the end. And we can see that where he went after Asa was trying to get him to be proud and trying to get him to not rely on and trust in the Lord like he should. So those are some things to be on the lookout for. Where we're not trusting in ourselves or in men or being proud or stubborn in some way, that we want to be tenderhearted and humble and grow in that all the way to the end. So, that'll be it for our study of King Asa. So we'll get back to 1 Kings chapter 15, Lord willing, next week. We want to start there in verse 25 if you want to just kind of get a preview. 25 through 34. So that's 10 verses that we have not yet covered in 1 Kings chapter 15. That's going to be about the kings of Israel. So that, as we've noted before, 1 and 2 Kings have their focus on the northern kingdom, whereas 2 Chronicles, the southern kingdom. But we'll see about what happened with after the death of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, because that was the last that where we left off in chapter 14, as far as the information on kings of Israel. So it's going to pick it up from after Jeroboam's death, who became king of Israel after him, and then what happened after that. And then that's actually going to go through chapter 16 and beyond with Ahab. So we're going to have several chapters now from the end of 15 onward in 1 Kings, we'll have a little bit about Jehoshaphat in here, but that's going to be the main focus from chapter 17 in 2 Chronicles. So anyway, we'll get continue in 1 Kings 15, Lord willing, next Lord's Day.